This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. I can't say I've been all that enthralled by what I've seen so far with smart city initiatives that involve digital out-of-home media companies. For the most part, they're just digital posters with some Wi-Fi and maybe some sensors tossed in so the things are quote-unquote smart. They exist to run ads, and the smart thing is largely a veneer to get the ad concession and for city governments to get free stuff that purports to make their burg seem somehow innovative. But there's a lot of potential there, and when you talk to someone who spends all his time thinking about and working on smart city initiatives, you learn there are some good things happening not only with broader smart initiatives, but also with efforts that do involve media companies. I wrote a mildly snarky piece recently about this stuff, and Gordon Feller sent me an email suggesting I have a look at a report he did for the OAAA, the Outdoor Advertising Association of America. He's a longtime Silicon Valley tech exec and founder of Meeting of the Minds, a nonprofit public-private partnership that's all about creating smarter cities. We had a frank talk about what's happened to date, where it really works, and what he sees as the vast potential for smart cities that work with media companies and digital signage technologies. So Gordon, thank you. What is Meeting of the Minds?
This is a nonprofit organization based in the U.S., an international leaders network, 32,000, I think, at current count, who in 50-plus countries are looking at the future of cities and engaged in building smart city solutions, or if they're not technologists and engineers building the solutions, they're involved at the city level in helping to adopt those technologies and create the environment, the regulatory and financial elements that make these deployments successful. And we have a lot of journalists and philanthropists who also participate in the network. So you could think of it as a knowledge exchange network amongst leaders around the world who are trying to make sense of how these various convergences of technology and citizen engagement are happening on the ground in cities today.
And this is a nonprofit, right?
Exactly. It was founded as a project of the World Bank headquarters in Washington, D.C., when the new president of the World Bank took office during the Clinton administration. And it spun out in 2001 as an independent nonprofit. And it's been working internationally ever since on this problem.
And your role with Meeting of the Minds?
I'm on the board of directors, along with an AT&T executive, a Microsoft executive, and a few others who are helping to, you know, provide assistance to the staff, the professional staff who are based here in California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, and who are working to develop programs every year, and it's a pretty rich menu of programs.
Okay. And what's your role? You said you're on the board, but...
Yeah. So, you know, I spent the last 36 years in Silicon Valley working with technology companies to help them think about this kind of problem. You know, what do you do when the real world demand for innovation catches up with what technologists are providing? And so I'm the advisor to the staff in my role as a board member about understanding the power of the new technology convergences that are taking place, compute, mobility, signage, connectivity, high-speed connectivity, cloud, all of those convergences that are taking place so that the staff can translate some of those technology innovations in ways that cities can use them. So I'm a bridge, so to speak, between the technology world on the one side and the city leaders elected and appointed on the other side.
Okay. So how is it funded then?
Sponsors make charitable contributions. Some of them are for-profits like AT&T and Verizon and Microsoft and Deloitte and Black & Veatch and Itron and a half dozen others. And then some of them are government agencies like the Cuyahoga County, which is the largest county in Ohio, or the state government of Ohio, which has an entity called Jobs Ohio, or the Federal Reserve Bank. And then some of them are grant-making foundations like the Barr Foundation in Boston and many others. So three types of funders. And in addition, when they convene, Meeting of the Minds convenes, as it does many times, almost 20 times a year, there's often a modest registration fee to cover costs. But the idea is to provide a lot of scholarships to participants who come from the nonprofit sector and the government sector, because they're often less able to, you know, pay a $500 registration fee for a 1 or 2 day program than the corporates are.
Right. All right. So we connected based on you sending me a note after I wrote a piece about Link NYC, and you suggested that I have a look at a report that your organization put together with the OAAA about smart cities and out of home and digital out of home, I guess, by extension.
Yep, exactly. We tried to look at where are we in not just the technology development, which is moving very fast, and not just the lessons learned from the deployments like Link NYC, which is one of many deployments, but how some of the leading technology innovations coming out of the tech industry are making new kinds of possibilities happen on the ground in cities. And where is that going to lead us was the question that we were asking in this report, which is free to anybody who wants to get access to it.
Mm-hmm. And where do you find it off the OAAA site?
Yeah. We've given them, you know, the chance to really get the feedback from the readers. And so it's available at their site. If people search on the OAAA for my name, they'll be able to find the report, which is called Understanding Smart Cities and the potential role of out-of-home advertising.
Mm-hmm. How do you define smart cities? Because I think it's one of those terms like artificial intelligence that gets used in all different kinds of ways.
Well, I quote Dr. Peter Williams, who's the chief technology officer at IBM for Big Green Innovations, which was an initiative of the CEO of IBM, because, of course, Big Blue was looking for ways of being more green. And smart cities became a place in IBM's universe and in a lot of other companies where the green and the blue converge. We'll come back to that maybe. But I quote Dr. Peter Williams, who says a smart city, quote, is where the Internet of Things and analytics are applied to public infrastructure, services, and participation in the community. So that was the working definition that we used here as the starting point for this particular research project, which involved interviewing not just the digital technology innovators who are coming out of mostly the private sector, but we interviewed a lot of others, including public sector, elected leaders, and appointed leaders working in cities. We interviewed independent analysts at places like IDC and Gartner. We interviewed journalists who've been writing about smart cities, including on the Meeting of the Minds blog site. And then we also interviewed people who were actually on the ground, citizens who were demanding better services for their tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. See, when I think, again, one of the reasons we connected is I am somewhat skeptical of the whole smart cities thing, not in the broader context, but in the context of digital out of home, because I see these quote unquote smart city kiosks, and that they are called smart city kiosks, and that they are in effect just digital out of home street furniture as they've always been, with maybe Wi-Fi attached and some sensors that could be attached to anything else. So it just strikes me as you have an advertising industry that's kind of leveraging this whole smart city mindset with the idea that this will get them entree to win an advertising concession and for the city help fund whatever smart city initiatives they have.
It is that, I would say, but it, I think, has become more than that because you have new types of machine-to-machine connections, You have new types of machine-to-person connections, and you have new types of person-to-person connections that are being facilitated by the best of the kiosks. You know, there's a pretty, you know, interesting moment of convergence now that wasn't available even just a few years ago, where we have lots of opportunities that weren't available before to analyze the data in real time locally, and not only, you know, analyze the data in the cloud sometime later. And that's a new dimension to the opportunity that wasn't there before. You know, the ability to do not just networked connections that help leverage the data so that it's more useful for decision making by people or machines, but you have changed business processes as a result. I mean, think of, you know, Uber and Lyft, right? Mm-hmm. The changed business process called getting from point A to point B. But you also have these physical devices and objects that are connected to the internet in new ways and connected to each other. And that makes for more intelligent decision-making locally where the action is. And I think ultimately the beneficiary of all of this has to be people who are being given better, maybe lower cost opportunities to do X, whether it's to get from here to there, to make a purchase, to transact without money, for instance, you know, wayfinding information. So I think there is a qualitatively different type of user experience because these digital interactions in the city, whether it's a kiosk or another type of sign, are able to do things that weren't really possible before some of the latest innovations rolled out into the commercial sphere.
I guess I'll go back to how does an advertising poster make a city smarter?
Because the interaction between the person who's in front of that screen and the city around them, the retail, the transit system, the city government that wants feedback on their policies and practices, you know, my portfolio of urban services that I have access to as a taxpayer. In other words, it's not just digital signage that's about selling me better and faster and cheaper to get me to buy X, which has been, you know, the history of every sign since the first sign was invented.
Yes.
But now there's interaction with other people in real time, with intelligent devices real time that I can see displayed in front of me. So, you know, if I'm going to a game, basketball or football game or whatever, and I want to know, you know, what's the best way to get from point A to point B, I can get that more easily in a digital kiosk sometimes than I can on a phone, particularly because I might be standing in a bus shelter where the opportunity to use that bus is only one of 6 or 8 or 10 choices that are each at a different price point, or maybe each at a different impact on the environment, or each one, you know, maybe has a different kind of promotion attached to it for that particular evening when lots of people are trying to get to the game.
Mm-hmm. So what I don't want to beat on Link NYC, but they're digital posters and they've got the Sidewinder interactive station that they've largely disabled, from what I understand, at least. Have you seen, or what are the information stations out there in some jurisdiction that I think you alluded to before, you really do it well, when, you know, that kind of nail it?
Well, Google Home's done some bus shelters that feature touch screen panels that are very cool.
And where are those?
Oh, they're scattered in different cities, certain multiple in the Bay Area, because they have obviously a critical mass of people that they have at headquarters in Mountain View and in other parts of the Bay Area. But I think they've deployed in London and in several Asian cities, again, on a trial basis with the city as their partner. Waypoint X has done a really interesting type of kiosk in Chicago and in multiple other cities.
And what does it do?
They do things like gaze tracking. You know, any kiosk screen could have like different zones assigned. Each one of the zones might show different content. So one zone might show ads and another zone could provide public service announcements. And I think what they're doing, you know, with the help of a 3D counter, is they calculate where the viewer is looking some or most of the time. And as different viewers view different particular ads or announcements, the information is captured and then inserted into an ad campaign report for the city government, or ultimately for an ad agency and their client. Another thing they're doing is audience analytics, where the citizen interacts with a kiosk. The audience analytics software makes certain that the ads that are shown are really relevant, so that beyond just making the ads more relevant, the audience analytics software can collect data about the demographics of who's seen it. And that records, you know, how long the ad is being viewed. And it also enables that whole gaze tracking thing I was just talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are probably a dozen interesting kiosk companies. One of them, Volta, based here in San Francisco, is a venture capital finance startup that's having a lot of success deploying kiosks that are attached to and actually function as EV recharge.
Okay.
And you get a free EV recharge with a big iPhone, you know, on steroids that sits right there where your car is doing the recharge, and you have a chance to interact with the city, with advertisers, with other people who are doing the same thing in other state, in other locations around the world. So I think there's going to be 100 flavors, and part of the challenge for city government that owns the parking spaces or owns the right to regulate this is, you know, which flavor is right for them.
Mm-hmm. Is the participation of media companies really a key to kind of driving kind of the public face of smart city initiatives, because they are the one company, with the exception of, you know, a private equity company doing the charging stations, that is willing to put the money into this in return for, you know, the advertising concession?
I think having them show up, the ad agencies, and with them, of course, their clients, is a real moment of transition, because, of course, those ad agencies advising those clients who can spend makes possible the deployment of this technology, because somebody like Link NYC or Waypoint is not going to do the deployments unless they know that there's a way to finance it. And right now, the primary financing model is ad-based. So Oath, which is a division of Verizon that is basically the old AOL, is developing programs in cities like Austin, Texas, and New Rochelle, New York, and Sacramento to try and, you know, experiment with what can you do with the 5G network. And 5G could be driven, that is, the installation of the 5G small cell, mm-hmm. could be driven by this kind of user who will drag the technology from 3G and 4G to where, you know, it could be easier and faster and cheaper to get that deployment of higher speed connectivity in the city. The big experiment right now is in Sacramento, where Verizon has committed $150 million to a new public-private partnership. Meeting of the Minds has been looking really closely at that, because it's the first time something like that has taken place anywhere. And in fact, we're going to convene Global Leadership Summit in November in Sacramento to look really closely at what the implications of that kind of a public-private partnership might be, because it's a different model for financing. It's not based on ad per se. It's based on the 5G network plus the fiber backhaul. New connections on both the wired and wireless are essential if Verizon wants to deploy better services to their subscribers. They've got 150 million cellular subscribers in the United States. I believe that's at last count. And it's not easy or cheap to deploy these LTE small cells or the IoT gateways or the sensor network that's going to be attached to it all. So they've made this agreement with the mayor, Daryl Steinberg, who's a really innovative mayor. He served for a long time in the California State Senate as the president of the California State Senate before he became mayor. And they're really doing some fascinating things. So we're expecting about 450 people from 20 countries to come and join us in November to look closely at what they're doing.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
And the idea in that private-public partnership would be that something like interactive smart stations, that kind of thing, would be what could house the small cells.
Among other things, exactly. Okay. And so Verizon bought a company called Sensity, which is capable of deploying the smart outdoor streetlights with a proprietary technology that talks to the 5G network. And that's also another way that they're going to do this. So it's a pretty cool thing.
But I would imagine a lot of cities, larger cities at least, have grown conditioned to media companies coming to them and saying, we will do infrastructure for you. You know, started with bus shelters.
Yeah, and JCDecaux, that's their business model at JCDecaux.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon, because cities find it very tempting to say, okay, you can, you know, deploy the smart bench. Mm-hmm. By the way, the smart bench industry itself is changing, and I would encourage people to look at Strawberry Energy in Europe and what they're deploying in London and other cities, because they have a unique solar-powered solution where they not only build and install and maintain the smart bench, they power it so that it has lots of connectivity, not just for you to plug in your phone and recharge, but for other purposes. So for those of your listeners who are looking at what's the latest and greatest, I've had a chance to meet last week with the CEO of Strawberry Energy, who's from Central Europe. I believe he's Serbian. And they built a really interesting business around that.
And what is a smart bench? I think I know, but...
Well, in this case, it's not dependent on the utility grid for its power. Mm-hmm. It's smart energy and also green energy because it's solar powered and it's got batteries for backup. It's smart because it's got high-speed wireless connectivity, which enables it to be a Wi-Fi hotspot to service the people who are sitting on the bench or near it in their need to be connected all the time, high speed. It's got a recharge plug for you to recharge your device. And it's smart because it's not dependent on ads per se. There's a different business model they're using.
With cities who buy into smart city initiatives, I would imagine there's everything from cities who, like an Austin or a Sacramento or something, that go deep. They really, really embrace it. And my suspicion is there are other cities who agree to these digital posters that are called smart and, you know, rub their hands together and say, now we're a smart city. We're done.
Yeah. And this worries me, of course, because I'm interested in much more opportunity for the public to benefit. So, you know, a smart city obviously has to be defined by each city, what their goal line is, what are the benefits that they want to deliver to whom. Mm-hmm. And we're encouraging actively for cities to really debate this as they look at where do they want to spend. In Kansas City, Missouri in the United States has probably been through this the most intensively, which is why they're considered by a lot of independent rating agencies like IDC and Gartner as the smartest city in the United States. So what they did was they looked at what are the assets that the city owns. And this is particularly Bob Bennett, who's been serving for quite a few years now as the chief innovation officer reporting to the mayor. And Bob's strategy was, let's look at the assets the city owns. We own parking spaces, we own parking meters, we own outdoor streetlights, we own traffic lights, we own bus shelters, we own the buses, we own a utility vehicle fleet, we own et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what citizens have paid their taxes to invest in, and they get a service attached to that. But often the quality of service is not as great as it should be. And the question is, how do we deliver better services to the citizens and the visitors who are spending money and helping to support the city's economy? And he looked each of these. Now, he had Sprint as a partner. He had Cisco as a partner. Sprint is headquartered there in his city. Mm-hmm. He had Kansas City Power and Light, which was willing to participate. He had the university as a partner. He had the Kauffman Foundation, which is a unique philanthropy that happens also to be headquartered there. So he had a lot of interesting anchor institutions who were ready to play. When I was at Cisco headquarters for 7.5 years in the executive office focused on smart cities until recently, you know, we used Kansas City, Missouri, and a few other cities like Barcelona as really our living labs, and we proposed lots of solutions that they could deploy. Cisco wanted to contribute to the financial cost of that because we were learning a lot about the convergence of these different types of technology. Look, network intelligence, which is the smarts behind all of this connective tissue, allows for a lot of things to happen, like the convergence of the mobile and the cloud, or the orchestration of different assets because they're operating on different types of information protocols and platforms. And then most importantly, we wanted to create for people like Bob Bennett and for the head of the transportation department of the city government, this visibility across what used to be very disparate systems. And now a smart city is trying to put the package together. And that's why during my time at Cisco, you know, I was pushing the idea that it's not just the Internet of Things. That's a subset of the broader Internet of Everything, because we're connecting people, we're connecting the business process, we're connecting the data and not just the things, mm-hmm. to make all of those valuable network connections a lot more valuable. primarily to a decision maker. And it could be the citizen who's a commuter at that moment, or it could be a visitor who's a retail customer at that moment, or it could be an emergency vehicle that's trying to move through traffic to get to an accident scene. So the goal was not driven by the technology partner, which unfortunately is often the case, but in the Kansas City, Missouri instance and a few others that I could point to, really the goals were set by the city. These are the things that we want as outcomes. Now tell us which technology is helping to enable us to get faster and cheaper and smarter to that outcome.
Mm-hmm. And I would assume that's the mantra that you try to reinforce with cities is you have to understand your goal. And
exactly.
Not just say we want to get smart.
Exactly. And the question, of course, is can we figure out a way to make the city smart and reduce the operating costs or increase the capacity of the city to become more productive, economically productive, because tax revenue is, you know, the primary form of, you know, financial capacity in the city. By the way, parking revenue in most cities is number two. And as you smarten your parking, you're also discovering that Uber and Lyft are taking what essentially used to be parking customers away. And yeah. Now cities have to face the reality that their revenues that they had expected for the out years on their whatever 5-year budget plan are suddenly shifting underneath them.
Right. But you have cities who are legendary for having no parking downtown. And Uber and Lyft is changing that. And, you know, I've seen some things like camera-based systems that can scan a whole parking lot and identify there are 3 spots available.
So, and by the way, the best I've studied a lot of these different providers mm-hmm. and used as many of them as I could around the world as I travel. Mm-hmm. The very, very best is a company called Clever City with an I at the end, CleverCiti. Mm-hmm. And your listeners should look at their website because they've deployed in Dubai and Munich and in 2 or 3 dozen cities. And what they're able to do with the data about who parks where and enabling that transaction to be seamless and frictionless, and then building on that for the city to then manage things like traffic flows or emergency mm-hmm. response, it's pretty cool. And that's an instance where a single technology becomes the core of a multiplicity of applications that the city can use to make not just the user experience in the city more interesting and more efficient, because everybody who visits a town wants it to be simple and seamless, but it also allows the city to start building on top of that a whole bunch of new services.
I imagine another big challenge is you've got all these sensors generating all of this data, and it's a little bit like what retailers have said for the longest time that, yeah, we've got all this sales data and everything else, but we don't even know where to begin in terms of what to do with it all, make sense of it all.
I know. And this is something which, of course, you know, we talk about big data, and what we have to start talking about are little insights, because the city can't utilize the big data. It doesn't have the kind of data scientist, data analytics capacity that you would have in the private sector. And they can't mm-hmm. even afford very often to employ those people who are in demand from the private sector because of the differential in pay. So the question is, what are we doing to enable the city to get out of just collecting big data to extracting the insights from the data? AWS is really pushing very hard on this, as also is Microsoft, as your team, much less Google Cloud. And so the fight between AWS and Azure for these public sector, you know, city government accounts is not just do your transactions in the cloud and move it all out of the office and out of the back office and make it faster and cheaper and more efficient. But we have analytics to help you figure out what all this data means in terms of actionable insights, either for machines like that parking meter or that streetlight, or for the traffic manager or for the citizen moving through the city.
Hmm. Does there almost need to be some sort of company that comes along and says, hey guys, we'll be the middleware for this. We'll help rationalize and harmonize this stuff so you as a city can have a dashboard?
Oh yeah, you're absolutely onto it. And I think there's a small company, a startup in Seattle that is just about to become more visible called Substrate, which does exactly this for their clients. And there's another company that is doing projects in Kansas City called Exact, X-A-Q-T, which is, you know, this urban intelligence platform that Chris, the CEO, founded. And so those two companies, who for all I know might wind up working together at some point, they're doing exactly that. And I would suspect there are going to be others who show up to try to essentially make sense of the world for the city manager mm-hmm. or the CEO of the city or the mayor.
Setting aside digital out of home and thinking more about digital signage, pure digital signage, it's just public communications or retail communications, whatever. What do you see the role of software companies in the smart city space?
Oh, certainly one of them is going to be this whole, you know, making sense of the big data that gets collected from the digital sign, because every cell phone that passes by becomes, you know, a potentially interesting MAC address to learn from,
right?
Because if it passes by every day at the same time, then of course there's an actionable opportunity there potentially to push a coupon that says, well, looks like, you know, this is your daily commute. We could have a coffee waiting for you at your destination every day that you commute. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, you know, distributed intelligence and acting on the distributed intelligence is one of the things that software companies are enabling. Another is this interoperability, you know, the open standards-based platform that's become essential for enabling all the different third parties to create or plug in their applications. That's something else which the digital signage company, you know, the owner of that physical asset doesn't have the ability all the time to do for themselves. And then there's privacy. I mean, citizens in cities, particularly in Europe right now, are demanding that their privacy be respected and that it always be that any interaction with the network anonymizes them. And that's not always an easy automatic thing to do. You know, we want these connections between the potential citizen interactor with the digital signage to have the right to be maintaining the privacy and security of their, you know, their personal life. Mm-hmm. And some governments, like the German government, are mandating that that's a requirement. You can't play in their space unless you do it.
Right. So if I'm interested in learning a lot more about smart cities, you mentioned that Meeting of the Minds has a blog.
Yes, every day, 4 days a week, sometimes five, but, you know, at least 4 days a week, people come to the blog site, so meetingoftheminds.org/blog. And we welcome contributions from lots of interested people who are listening to this podcast to share their point of view. It's not just for well-published experts, but it's also for people who are many different aspects of the industry, including the citizen at large. And it's always, you know, an unpublished, unique contribution. And there have been 600 of them so far, I think. And then they get rolled up into an annual magazine. But also, people should check out this big global leadership summit in Sacramento. Not that, you know, we'll have more than 450 people, but more that they're going to learn from what we did last year,
right,
which was Cleveland, that each city has a kind of unique focus and a unique set of experiments that are underway. In Cleveland, it's with the anchor institutions like the universities, the Cleveland mm-hmm. Clinic, university hospitals.
It seems like there's a lot going on in Sacramento right now.
Oh, I know. I know. It's a real powerhouse. And the CIO of the city, Maria McGonigal, and the chief innovation officer of the city, Lewis Stewart, are really spearheading a drive to get the city to be not just an early adopter, but to also be very critical about how well performing these innovations are, because the marketing material from the developer of the innovation is always claiming that it saves them money, it saves them time, but sometimes that's not the case.
Hmm. All right, Gordon, thank you so much for taking the time with me.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. And if people want to reach me, it's gordon@meetingoftheminds.org.
Perfect.
Thanks so much.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.